Hello and welcome to The Wanted Podcast. My name is Pugh Mpure, editor of Business Day Wanted. It's July 2024, and in the world of Wanted, it is for the first time Food Month. That's right, we have our first food issue on shelves this Friday with Business Day. You can look forward to beautifully plated delights alongside intimate and revealing conversations with people who view food as more than just sustenance. We also place a spotlight on food security and also offer you a way to help in hunger alleviation. Remember, you can subscribe to Business Day and receive your magazine in the mail every month. And you need to go to wantedonline.co.za and see all of the details. Now, this week in the Wanted podcast, we hone in on watches, one of our favorite content pillars. And we'll be chatting with one of our favorite contributors, Gary Cottrell. We'll talk about his experiences at the recent-ish Watches and Wonders Fair in Geneva. And we'll talk about the experience, which I dived into, incidentally, for the first time last year. His highlights, emerging trends, and what we can look forward to as the year progresses. We'll also chat about the recent news of Rolex's departure from South Africa and what that means for local enthusiasts. Spoiler alert, you'll be well taken care of. So, who is Gary Cottrell? The world of watch journalism is really incomplete without his name. All watch people are passionate and they dive deep into the intricacies of the crafting and the history. And Gary is no different. But I can think of no other columnist in this country as thoughtful and imaginative about the way they write about watches. Gary was, of course, the founding editor of Business Day Wanted, which means he's been associated with the title for almost two decades now. And I'm very pleased to be chatting to him today. Hi, Gary. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Thanks for having me on the show today.
It's really, really great to have you. I've been wanting to do this for a while and we'll dive right in. So, you know, as we said in the intro, we'll start at Watches and Wonders, which, you know, for me last year was the first time I'd ever attended the thing. And it was absolutely mind blowing. It was the year of the return, of course, because it was after COVID. But crucially, the previous year, they had a smaller event, but Asia was still closed. And then the year that I went, which was 2023, Asia had opened up again. So there was just this influx of media and dealers and collectors and just people generally in the industry. You know, and Geneva was a buzz and it was really, really great and overwhelming, of course. And you went again this year, as you do almost every year. And maybe we can just start with what is Watches and Wonders, you know, a general overview of this showcase's history, and then we can get into some of the trends that have come through from there.
Sure. Just to say also that every year is overwhelming and exciting, even for the old goats. Watches and Wonders is the premium watch gathering in the world. Something that evolved out of what was called SIHH many years ago that ran for a few decades. But I think just, you know, apart from COVID, there's been a lot of evolution in that space. And Watches and Wonders is now the new title of this gathering in Geneva. It happens in Shanghai and Dubai. And there are, you know, various other side events that happen at the same time. But Geneva is the main host city. As the center of, you know, Switzerland being the center of luxury watch production. Not to say that there aren't amazing watches being produced elsewhere in the world, but it has historically been the center of excellence and the benchmark basically of watchmaking. Yeah, so you went last year. I wasn't able to go, and so I was not able to compare years, and you know, last year being the first big gathering post COVID was obviously very important, and it's amazing always obviously being at an in-person event, you know, not only handling the beautiful pieces but also just meeting industry creatives and the craftsmen involved, which always makes a huge difference. But certainly this year's event was in full swing. There were a lot more exhibitors. They had record number attendances as well. But I think that, you know, with age and years of attendance, one gets into a much different pace. So it's less kind of frenetic, I guess, for me. And I prefer having, you know, more quality time with people than than racing through all of it, which has tended to be the pace of the past. You know, one travels so far to see these creations in the flesh or the metal, so to speak. And the opportunity to meet with people in the industry. So it is an important time just to actually make good use of that opportunity.
Maybe let's look at the fair itself. You know, you had a 2-year break. And what are the main three things that struck you about how it's changed or how it's evolved?
The great thing with the fair is that the invitation has been extended to brands outside of the traditional Swiss industry. So Grand Seiko is in attendance and, you know, I think causing quite a stir in a positive way. And there are a couple, you know, I think Bremont was there from the UK. And but I think also this year there was a very clear refocus on the mechanical side of movements of the watch industry. And not to say that, you know, design isn't still a priority and a focus, but, you know, it's important that we don't forget that, you know, watches are not just about status and whatever. There's a lot of history and work that goes into producing the most marvelous mechanical movements that sit inside these pieces. Yeah, which I think it's, you know, it speaks to, I think, something that we've been doing. You know, I know you as well. It's sort of with Wanted is just kind of educating people on the fine craft of things, which is very important. Yeah.
And talking about that craft, so what were your favorite takeaways or most surprising product releases that you've seen and the kinds of things that you will see rolling out towards the end of the year?
Look, I think that, you know, speaking of movement making, certainly also the high end of the movement making is that there's a focus on calendars, which I think also refocuses our attention on time and our place in the universe of our world, which is, you know, it comes at a very important time because, you know, we're dealing with a lot of rather existential crises. And I think it's important that we, you know, I think these little wonderful tools are in a way kind of symbolic and forcing us to kind of maybe look at our positionality in a different way. But, you know, there's always color trends and kind of style trends that come through. And, you know, even although, you know, the watch industry they will speak to each other, but, you know, a lot of their works are guarded. So it's interesting to see how, you know, trends emerge organically in industry. You know, something like the sand colored dials, and that might well just be seen as a different take on champagne dials, but certainly, you know, I would think that maybe something like the release of June or the remake of June and the new one that's just come out would possibly have some influence, although many of the brands were denying this. But it's interesting to see how many dial colors were either named sand or had some kind of dune or sand related kind of naming convention, which also maybe alludes to how we view time. So if you think of like sand timers or something like that, we could, you know, maybe read into it that way.
You spoke earlier on about the independents, and, you know, they traditionally, you know, would have some kind of presence, but it's not as prominent, and the booths are not as big as, you know, as the big guns. But, you know, and I know that you're an advocate for a big advocate for independent brands. Can we maybe talk about a few that, you know, you always have your eye on, and what they came through with at Watches and Wonders?
Yeah, look, I mean, quite often the most exciting things happen with the independent brands because maybe they're less, you know, they don't have huge empires to maintain, maybe. Sure. But, you know, this still requires a lot of resources and investment in research and development. But, you know, it's a small brand like Resonance, you know, always produces the wonder in the Watches and Wonder. The other brand is H. Moser. Really just seem to push the boundaries in their shapes and the way they see or view the reading of time. Resonance, you know, started, the founder was a product designer, so, you know, functionality and comfort and stuff comes first. But, you know, time is red, a flat intersecting planes rather than the conventional dial configurations. H-Modes is really amazing with their dial materials. They've got their Vanta Black, which is almost like looking into a black hole, infinity, which is quite marvelous. They've been quite innovative with their streamliner and, you know, reading time in the most simplest of ways. Because, of course, watches, you know, are not really there for us to read time anymore. We have so many devices around us that give us time. So it's, you know, it's about the love and the joy of, you know, these little marvels as almost as artworks on your wrist. So for me, like the smaller brands, I mean, not to say the bigger brands aren't doing it, but for the smaller brands who are producing innovative ways of experiencing time, I think, are what's the highlight for me. Yeah.
Well, one of my highlights talking about the bigger brands was the Cartier booth last year. And, you know, Cartier has been our host for the last 2 years and was, you know, your host as well. And I wonder, you know, what they have up their sleeve, because I know that, you know, they've always got one or two things that are guaranteed to delight. I know that you also had the interview with the creative director of the watches and jewels there at Cartier. So what do they have in store for us?
You know, the wonderful thing with Cartier is that throughout their history, they've been really, really good at kind of picking up on the kind of vibe of the era. And if you look through their archives, they're just such wonderful pieces that are really just, you know, they're serious pieces, but they just still have a sense of humor and are fun kind of reflections on the kind of attitudes and styles of particular eras. And with their new Privé collections, they have been reintroducing some of their classics, their icons, and rethinking them. But they also, you know, in their kind of high jewelry watches, their creative direction is really just about taking some quite, what might seem quite prosaic kind of things within our world and just kind of giving them a twist and finding that sense of humor and not being, I dare say, not being so serious about watchmaking or jewelry making, but they certainly are serious about it and they produce such fine things. But it's just about finding delight, I guess, in the everyday.
And I suppose we can actually announce here, if I'm not jumping the gun, that we're actually going to be covering watches a lot more going forward, because thankfully for us, some of your time is freed up, so you're going to be giving us a bit more content, which we're very happy about. And some of the watch content or big watch news that has come through recently, a big brand, you know, to say the least, that would have been at Watches and Wonders as well, is Rolex and the developments in South Africa. And, you know, I think a lot of people would have been a bit concerned to hear that Rolex is leaving South Africa. And I'll put it crudely like that, but that's not quite the full story, is it, Gary?
No, they're not abandoning us. If anything, there's going to be more of a presence, just not with a representative office here, basically. So they have plans to open standalone stores. They have got wonderful partnerships in place already with local retailers, but that whole landscape is going to be expanded and there's some very exciting things planned ahead. I did speak to some of their former leaders in the office here who have, you know, everybody's parted on good terms. And the plan is that the Vault in Johannesburg has taken over the servicing department. And so the full service suite is still offered as it has always been for many, many years. So fear not, your watches won't need to be sent off to Switzerland unless absolutely necessary. But there is, so, you know, and the Vault has arrangements with other retailers. So they're not entirely, you know, a monopoly or controlling the local Rolex scene. And the same applies to the subsidiary Tudor. It's all going to be as it has been before, but it's just a slightly rearranged landscape locally.
I was going to say, yeah, I think there are also other, you know, developments later on. I see Charles Gregg is working on a Rolex expansion, you know, a shop within a shop. And then we have one of their partners, there's going to be a boutique. Yeah, there's a boutique in partnership with Shema that's opening up in Sandton City. So it looks like Rolex is leaving, but is doubling down on investment through other partners, which is very exciting. What I was going to ask is, I don't know if you know this for sure, but if you were to speculate, what about the local market has necessitated this change in the way that Rolex interacts with our market?
We're not a very big market, to be frank. And I think that, maybe in the past, just kind of historically, because it's just the way it was. But I think that there are a lot of brands that are changing their operations internationally. It's not only Rolex. I think many of the luxury brands are kind of almost taking back control of their markets and going independent with their boutiques and stores. In smaller markets like ours, they obviously still rely on independent retailers, because maybe the market's not big enough to have huge standalone stores or flagship stores. But it's not only Rolex who have been doing this.
So Gary, what can we look forward to in the next couple of weeks? I know, of course, you've got your regular watch page in the July issue coming out this Friday. Maybe from what we can expect there, and then one or two highlights from beyond that we can look forward to online.
Well, just going back to Cartier, I mean, this month's column features the Tortue, which translated into English, tortoise or turtle. And it's one of their icons that they've reintroduced with new movements and finessed the case design a little.
It's beautiful.
It's part of their, Cartier's well known for their shapely watches, like the Crash and many others, and obviously also the first watch you think of with Cartier is the Tank, square shape, and the Santos. Amongst that, the sort of premium versions of some of these watches, the Tortue is one of those. But there are a number of, I don't know how much you want to reveal about what coming up in future issues, but I think the focus really is on exceptional watchmaking in that column. We reserve, I think, that space for, highlighting some of the, standout accomplishments in the industry. And not to say that, sometimes the more simple timepieces aren't worth celebrating. But I think that, when it comes to the printed page, I like to think we should fill it with something that's absolutely exceptional. And the focus generally on some fine movement making, again, which is, a big focus from what I'm seeing it from the fair, certainly.
All right, great. We'll leave it there. Gary, thank you very much for joining us. Make sure to go to wantedonline.co.za daily to read Gary's contributions. And remember, we are on Instagram, Facebook, and X at WantedOnlineSA. This podcast is available on Spotify, Apple, and Iono. Till next time, I am Spiwe Mche.